The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Diane Edelman for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the Reader's Digest. We have one long article for you this week, Good News About Brain Cancer. An experimental new treatment makes tumors melt away, by Christopher Cox. One morning in April 2023, Marcella Maus, a cancer researcher at Mass General Research Institute in Boston, got a call from her colleague, Brian Choi. He called me, and he's like, "Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God." And I'm like, "What is going on?" Dr. Maus says. Dr. Choi, a neurosurgeon with the languid demeanor of a surfer, was not given to outbursts. Dr. Maus hurried over to his office. The day before, Drs. Choi and Maus had treated their first patient in a clinical trial for an aggressive brain cancer called glioblastoma, infusing genetically modified white blood cells directly into the fluid surrounding his brain. They had been up all night worrying, especially after the patient, a 74-year-old man, developed a fever. Dr. Choi had ordered an MRI. When Dr. Maus got to Dr. Choi's office, images from the MRI were loading on his screen. They stared in wonder. The patient's tumor, which a few days before had shown up on the scan as a bright blob the size of a strawberry, had almost entirely disappeared. My first instinct was that there was something wrong with the MRI scanner, Dr. Choi says. But the follow-up scans looked even better. Several weeks later, they treated a second patient, a civil engineer from upstate New York named Tom Fraser. And, to their astonishment, the process repeated itself. The infusion, the fever, and the rapid regression of the tumor. It was almost like clockwork, Dr. Maus says. After a third patient had a similar response, she paused the trial and wrote up the results. Glioblastoma is the most common type of malignant brain cancer in adults. It can strike at any age, and it's nearly uniformly fatal. Patients are often diagnosed in the emergency room after the tumor causes some somatic catastrophe, such as seizure, sudden loss of speech, or an inability to control limbs. The median time from diagnosis to death is just over a year. The first step in treating the disease hasn't changed in decades. Maximal safe resection, a surgery to remove as much of the tumor as possible while preserving neurological function. Because glioblastoma is so adept at infiltrating the brain, the surgeon almost always leaves cancer behind, which quickly starts growing again. Some patients respond to radiation or the chemotherapy drug temozolomide, but even those add months rather than years to the average survival time. Roger Stupp, an expert in glioblastoma, says that the disease has proved to be a graveyard of ideas. Decades of research have gone nowhere. Within the past 20 years, however, a once unfashionable field called immunotherapy has upended all expectations in oncology. It proceeds from a simple premise. The human immune system is very good at attacking anything it registers as disease. If it could be turned against cancer, it could eliminate a tumor more thoroughly than a surgeon's knife and more durably than the poison of chemotherapy. Doctors Maus and Choi thought they'd found a way to do just that using the immune system's all-purpose killer, the T cell, which the body sends to neutralize pathogens of all sorts, including bacteria, viruses, and parasites, but not, usually, cancer. By extracting T cells from a patient's blood, editing the cell's DNA in a lab, and reintroducing them at the site of the tumor, they had gotten the body to react to cancer as it would to a virus, and destroy it. It was the culmination of years of research. Tom Fraser remembers that on the day of his infusion, the room was crowded with doctors, nurses, and scientists. There was a sense, he says, that history was being made. I felt a little poke when the needle was inserted, he recalls, but it was a very quick process. 24 days later, he walked out of the hospital, weak and exhausted, but with his tumor in near total remission. There's been a revolution in understanding cancer and the tools to tackle it, says research oncologist Daniel Haber, director of the Mass General Cancer Center. Immunotherapy, paired with our greater understanding of the genetics of cancer cells, has produced breakthroughs for previously untreatable forms of the disease, especially liquid tumors like leukemia and lymphoma, and skin cancers like melanoma. Death sentences have become commuted. Hopeless cases have been cured. Until recently, the biggest exception to this parade of good news has been in solid tumors like pancreatic cancer and glioblastoma. So Tom Fraser has it right. If these early results hold, it will make history. If we can treat glioblastoma, perhaps the hardest case in a field made up of hard cases, there's not a cancer that would seem to be out of reach. After Drs. Choi and Mouse published their results in the New England Journal of Medicine, they heard from oncologists all over the world. They're desperate, and they say, "We want to offer something, because there's just nothing out there," Dr. Choi says. Patients with glioblastoma are often sent to surgery within days of their diagnosis. The urgency comes from both the aggressiveness of the disease and the unique nature of the brain itself. Trapped inside the skull, there's nowhere for it to go when a tumor begins growing. As normal tissue is pushed aside, the neurological effects can multiply quickly. Cancer elsewhere in the body can be debilitating, but it's unlikely to suddenly take away your ability to speak, to move, to think. Dr. Mouse and her team started enrolling new trial participants in May 2024. Hundreds of people with glioblastoma have written to or called Mass General about the study, but Dr. Mouse had room for only 18 more. "It's heartbreaking," Dr. Mouse says, about having to turn people away. Kevin McKay of Annapolis, Maryland, was diagnosed with a brain tumor in 2016. That summer, he and his wife, Katie McKay, were driving down for a vacation in Myrtle Beach with their two children, ages 3 and 5. Kevin began convulsing and moaning. The kids were watching cartoons in the back seat, and they thought he was playing a joke on them, like being like a monster, and I thought so too, Katie says. I grabbed his arm, and I realized his eyes were in the back of his head. At the hospital in Myrtle Beach, doctors saw two lesions on his brain. Kevin had his first surgery at Johns Hopkins and began radiation and chemotherapy. Katie and Kevin were college sweethearts. They met at the University of Maryland and married in 2010. "He was so lovable," Katie says. "He liked to play little pranks on the family, dropping habanero in Katie's drink when she wasn't watching, or waking up his mother-in-law with a leaf blower. He was 32 when he was diagnosed. Eventually, he had to step back from his job as an engineer. He lost the ability to sense his left side. Soon, he could no longer speak. Kevin died in July 2018, 2 years after his first seizure." When Dr. Mouse started her Ph.D. in immunology a little more than 25 years ago, the idea that it could one day make brain tumors like Kevin's disappear was laughable. "I was told that it was career suicide," Dr. Mouse says. "People had been trying for 100 years to get the immune system to recognize cancer, and it was a dead end." She knew that though cancer has long confounded efforts to kill it, it has a vulnerability. Cancerous cells have to be at least somewhat different from the other cells in the body, or they wouldn't be cancer, If you could train the immune system's T cells to recognize that difference, that would be the end of the disease. Efforts to attain that goal have already reshaped oncology. Researchers have developed drugs that selectively bind to proteins in cancer cells, inactivating them, targeted therapies. They've discovered ways to attack tumors by modulating the body's immune response, immune checkpoint inhibitors. And they've gotten good at growing white blood cells outside the body and reinfusing them to overwhelm a tumor. Some of these approaches, while powerful, were a bit like flooding your house to get rid of rats. What if we could hire an exterminator instead? Immunologists zeroed in on the T cell, learning how to manipulate its genetic code to prompt it to hunt for specific proteins on the surface of cancer cells. This engineered T cell has a special name, a CAR T cell. CAR, C-A-R, stands for chimeric antigen receptor. The receptor is what binds a T cell to a protein on a cell's surface. Antigen is another name for that protein. And the chimera, in this case, is the hybrid between the T cell's normal receptor and its genetically modified components. A decade ago, when Dr. Maus was at the University of Pennsylvania, her mentor, immunologist Carl June, developed an effective CAR T cell therapy for leukemia. Almost overnight, CAR T cells became the most exciting technology in cancer. Today, more than 34,000 leukemia patients have received some form of CAR T cell therapy. The biggest question in oncology today is whether this approach could also be used for solid tumors. Dr. Maus was one of dozens of specialists in immunotherapy who began looking for a suitable cancer for a new CAR T cell trial. "I'm not an expert in any disease right now," she says, "but I think a lot about how to get T cells to do what we want them to do. The T cell is my hammer, and I'm on the lookout for nails." Glioblastoma, she knew, had a promising nail for the T cell hammer, an antigen called epidermal growth factor receptor variant 3, EGFRV3, which isn't found in healthy brain tissue. In a clinical trial that she began before moving to Mass General, she and a neurosurgeon at the University of Pennsylvania named Donald O'Rourke gave patients injections of T cells engineered to target EGFRV3. Some of the CAR T cells made it to the patient's brains, but they didn't seem to have any effect on the tumor. By the time Dr. Maus set up her lab at Mass General in 2015, she had two ideas for how to improve the treatment. One big one and one medium one. The medium one was to infuse the T cells directly into the fluid surrounding the brain, which would, she hoped, allow more of them to reach the tumor. The big idea was meant to address a separate problem. Glioblastoma, like most solid tumors, is heterogeneous. Different parts of the tumor have different proteins on the surfaces of their cells, which makes eliminating them by going after EGFR3 alone impossible. Dr. Maus's new CAR T cell was engineered to secrete a molecule called bispecific T cell engager, which acted like double-sided tape, making it easier for T cells to bind to a second protein called wild-type EGFR. The approach, Dr. Maus says, was as fine-tuned as I can possibly imagine. Drs. Maus and Haber were at dinner when she showed him some scans from the first patient. "The world stopped," he said. "The possibilities were immediately clear. If it's really working in glioblastoma," he says, "does that open up the whole bandwidth of solid tumors?" Dr. Maus is quick to point out the limits of what this first phase of the trial has proved. Tom Fraser, who had the longest-lasting response, has recently seen signs that his cancer is starting to grow again. "I feel like this was a double or a triple," Dr. Maus said. it's not a home run. Dr. June's assessment is more optimistic. He compares Dr. Mouse's experiment to his celebrated work with leukemia. It took just 5 years to get from their first promising results to FDA approval. Today, thousands of patients have been effectively cured. I think by 2029, we're going to have FDA approval of CAR T cells for glioblastoma, he says. Cancer researchers are fluent in the language of failure. The past century, divided roughly in half by Richard Nixon's declaration of a war on cancer in 1971, has been marked by frustrations and setbacks, approaches that should have worked, but didn't. Oncologists once thought that they were treating a single disease. Now they know that no two types of cancer are alike. Indeed, the same cancer in two individuals can be wildly different. Cancer, Dr. Haber says, is as complicated as medicine. For all the promise of immunotherapy, there are formidable obstacles. The first of these is cost. At Dr. Mouse's lab, every device and every person represents tightly coiled helixes of time and money. There are PCR machines, biosafety cabinets, ELISA readers, autoclaves, freezers, cell counters, incubators, and centrifuges, a proliferation of white boxy machines that makes the space look like an office with an unusual number of mini-fridges. The treatment can cost between $500,000 and $1 million. Even if drug companies don't try to profit, the process is labor-intensive. T-cells have to be removed from the patient's blood, genetically altered, then reinfused. The complicated process of producing CAR T-cells also limits the number of people who can be treated. For an emerging therapy like CAR T for glioblastoma, the restrictions are even greater. For example, because they want to ensure that any positive outcome can be attributed to the CAR T-cell regime alone, the exclusion criteria rule out anyone who has been treated with any prior gene therapy or gene-modified cellular therapy. None of the oncologists I spoke with thought that immunotherapy would completely supplant proven approaches. Some cancers will still be best treated by surgery, others by radiation or chemotherapy. CAR T-cell therapy may be reserved for the most stubborn cancers. As more CAR T-cell treatments get FDA approval, however, cost and efficiency may improve. You're on the incipient curve of discovery, Dr. Haber says, but science builds on itself, and sometimes things that are incredibly complicated, expensive, and dangerous open the door to things that become much more democratic, affordable, and standard. Doctors Mouse and Choi have already refined the protocol for their glioblastoma trial. Patients will now have a short run of chemotherapy before the infusion to limit the number of CAR T cells killed or inactivated by the innate immune system, allowing more of them to remain active at the tumor site for longer. Dr. Mouse says that when Mass General hired her, they weren't looking for a CAR T specialist. They wanted a T-cell specialist. The difference was meaningful. The CAR T-cell, as complicated as it is one expression of a much deeper knowledge. That may be how we ultimately reduce costs. The better we understand the immune system, the easier it will be to find ways to make it do what we want. On the first day of summer 2024, I went to visit Tom Fraser, participant number two in the trial, at his home. I had been warned that the cancer had made speaking difficult for him, and all my phone communications to that point had been with his wife, Debbie Fraser. It was a pleasant surprise to be greeted at the door by a tall, sturdy man with a shock of salt and pepper hair. "Welcome," he said, shaking my hand. "I'm Tom Fraser." He led me to his tidy kitchen, where we sat and talked for nearly 2 hours. The sun outside was almost unbearably bright. Before he retired, Tom led a forensic engineering firm. After some catastrophe, he'd been called in to determine its causes. When a Bethlehem Steel warehouse near Buffalo caught fire in 2016, sending up a plume of smoke so large that 300 households and several schools had to be evacuated, Tom determined that the culprit was an improperly installed lighting system that had thrown sparks onto flammable materials below. He takes the same methodical approach to discussing the course of his disease, consulting a timeline he marked out on a legal pad. "I put some dates down here just so I can remember," he says. In August 2021, the Frasers were staying at their cottage, a little white house perched on a rock in the St. Lawrence River, when Tom knew something was wrong. "I got up in the morning," he says, "and I couldn't read." It took him a month to schedule an MRI. Once he did, the diagnosis arrived quickly. He'd never heard of glioblastoma, but his doctor was direct with him. Without treatment, he could die within 6 months. He and his wife told their family, 4 daughters and 8 grandchildren, the news over Zoom. One of Tom's daughters works as a physician's assistant at Mass General, and she encouraged him to travel there to get his tumor removed. His surgeon, Brian Nahed, needed nearly 5 hours to complete the operation. "Tom shows me the scar, a horseshoe, on the left side of his head. It's okay, as long as I can comb my hair over it," he says. After the surgery, he started radiation and chemotherapy, then underwent treatment by Optune Geo, a wearable device that uses electric fields to try to disrupt cell division. Dr. Nahed was frank. He told us, "That'll work until it doesn't work," Debbie says. This is what happens. This heterogeneous cancer figures out ways. That's what makes it so aggressive and so difficult to treat. Even so, when the cancer recurred after 20 months, the Frasers felt blindsided. It was Dr. Nahed who suggested that Tom enroll in the trial at Mass General. On the day of the infusion, in the summer of 2023, 30 people crowded into the room to watch. For all the time and money and innovation that went into producing that moment, the scene was oddly humble. A normal hospital room, Tom sitting up in his bed as a doctor pushed the plunger on a syringe. The next month was difficult. Even though the scans showed the tumor shrinking, matching the dramatic results from the first patient, the doctors were reluctant to read too much into them. In the weeks that followed, Tom suffered a cascade of complications: atrial fibrillation, mysterious infections, a punishing fever. Dr. Choi tried to reassure them that the effects were a sign that the treatment was working. "By the time I left," Tom says, "I could hardly walk." Debbie shows me a picture from that day. In it, Tom looked feeble and miserable. Not himself, in her words. "Let me see that," Tom says, and Debbie turns the picture to him. "Oh," he says, "that is not myself." When they arrived back in New York, grandchildren greeted them with a poster saying, "Welcome home," with a hand-drawn rainbow floating near the bottom. That fall, Tom felt strong enough to return to the cottage. He wanted to help power wash the house, but Debbie overruled him. "We knew that things were stable, but we did not know the profound results," Debbie says. "That all changed when Dr. Mouse and her team published the paper in the New England Journal of Medicine. If CAR T cell therapy for glioblastoma eventually becomes standard, if Drs. Mouse and others can reproduce and improve on the results she got for Tom Frasier, his name will forever be tied with the birth of this treatment. I shouldn't say it, but I'm a little proud of myself," Tom says. Hope can be a shot of adrenaline or the steady drip of an IV, but it's always strong medicine. The intense days of those first scans are long behind. the Frasers have settled into a rhythm, something approximating the way they were before the diagnosis. Tom has also shifted the way he talks about his disease. For years, he spoke about beating glioblastoma, finding a cure for himself. Now he is more likely to refer to the patients who come after him, who will undoubtedly live longer because of what we've learned from his response to the CAR T cell therapy. He might not be done with his fight yet, however. After a scan in February 2024 showed signs of recurrence, new images taken in June 2024 showed just the opposite. The tumor had seemingly shrunk again. "Holy crap, I'm going to do a dance," he said. Now, according to Debbie, he's in better shape than he's been in months. Was it a temporary effect or a sign that the T cells were still active? We may only know years from now, and then only by implication, if a strong enough signal emerges from future CAR T cell trials. In the meantime, Tom told me about a trip he and Debbie were planning. "I've never visited Chicago in my life," I said. "This is nuts. I want to see this place. So let's go." That morning, they had been to their grandson's fifth grade graduation. It was a hot day, and they sat sweating in the parking lot. It had been almost 3 years since he'd been told he might have 6 months to live. That was Good News About Brain Cancer by Christopher Cox from New York Magazine. We'll end with a little humor. A man is standing on the curb, ready to cross the street. As he steps down and starts to cross, a car comes screaming around the corner and heads straight at him. The man picks up speed, but so does the car. The man turns back, but the car changes lanes and keeps coming at him. The man freezes with fear in the middle of the intersection. The car is inches away, then swerves and screeches to a halt. The driver rolls down the window. Behind the wheel is a squirrel. "See?" it yells. "Not as easy as it looks, is it?" We've run out of time for today's episode. I'm Diane Edelman, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Reader's Digest is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call area code 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.